On the morning of October 7, 2013, Barnett Zeldin and his dog Taffy left his home in Maze Landing, New Jersey, to bait his deer stand for the upcoming hunting season. He stopped briefly at his friend Sonny Patton's home in Chatsworth, New Jersey, to pick up a green 1992 Chevy Blazer he used for hunting. He said goodbye to Sonny and was never heard from again. As of this date, January 4th, 2020, Mr. Zeldin hasn't accessed any of his bank accounts, used any of his credit cards, or contacted any of his family and friends. No remains have been found. And Barry Zeldin has actually been declared dead in absentia. Unfortunately, the story of what happened to Mr. Zeldin and the timeline of events from the point he picked up his Blazer varies. And none of the evidence collected by authorities can be factually confirmed. The official story is that Mr. Zeldin went in the woods to bait his deer stand and went missing. A brief search was conducted by the New Jersey State Police, members of his hunting club, and several search and rescue organizations. Mr. Zeldin's Blazer was found with his dog Taffy still inside on October 12th. The official story again is that Mr. Zeldin went to bait his deer stand and disappeared into thin air. We here at Wicked Garden Podcast don't believe that, and neither does Mr. Zeldin's family. Over the course of this podcast, we will present arguments, evidence, and contradictions that exist, as well as alternate theories of what happened to Barry. This is the story of Barry Zeldin. This is Season 1, Episode 1 of Beyond the Garden Gate. I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand. Oh, I've been running from the law. Hope they won't shoot me down soon. Try to catch me howling at the moon. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Beyond the Garden Gate. I'm your host, Mike.
I'm your co-host, Tracy.
This is a production of Wicked Garden Podcast. This is a podcast. We're going to do a deep dive into the disappearance in the Pine Barrens of Barnett, Barry Zeldin, as you heard there in the intro.
We've really been looking forward to doing this episode and creating this new show. This new show will have a slightly different approach to how we normally operate. Mike got really interested in this story. We had briefly mentioned it in one of our prior episodes. And Mike, what really drove you to want to create this new show?
Well, the first time I heard about this story was when I was reading David Politis's Missing 411, The Hunter's Book. And it came up. I was just interested if there was anything going on in New Jersey. And there was one story, and it was Barry's story. Subsequently, when we were looking for material for Wicked Garden, I went to the New Jersey Pine Barren forums and I read about the case again, and it was just baffling.
This case is baffling. There are quite a few things about this case that just do not make sense to us.
Right. I reached out to the family, a couple members of the family, you know, and tried to reach out to a couple of the guys on the Pine Barren forums that were talking about the case. And after a little bit of time and a couple tries, I got in touch with Debbie Zeldin, who was Barry's daughter-in-law. She is married to Barry's son, Glenn. And tonight we have an interview from her. She's going to introduce us a little bit into the material here, and we'll be back to talk about what we plan on doing going forward to help this family out and help perhaps bring some closure on this case.
Getting the dog settled and everything.
Oh, I know how that is. We got two Jack Russells as well.
Oh, fun. They're energetic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a case that I read about, and it's just, it's crazy how
baffling.
Just, yeah. Yeah, it really is. So yeah. I wanted to reach out to you guys. What my thought process is that is if I can raise enough awareness here on my end here in Jersey, you know, maybe we could maybe get some kind of initiative going so that when the early spring hits, maybe we can all, maybe somebody will go back out and look, you know?
Right.
So that's kind of,
because I really don't think anybody has in quite some time.
You know, I took a ride out the other day to take a look at it, you know, the spot. And I actually went to the wrong spot, but, you know, it is pretty dense in there, but I don't know. I just don't get it. So, if you got some time, I've just got some questions here I'd like to ask you, just so I can familiarize myself.
Sure, yeah, I'm hoping forgive my memory, because I'm in my 50s as well.
I know.
Do the best I can.
I know exactly how that is. I'm going to start back at the beginning, and there's going to be a lot of these questions that you won't be able to answer, but what I intend to do is talk to you, and then maybe get some names from you or maybe some other people that may have been his buddies or something that I can talk to. And then I'm actually going to try to talk to the state police about it too. On the day that he disappeared, which was October 7th, 2013, do you know what time he left the house?
Well, he didn't leave the house that day. Let me think about this. Because it was like what day of the week? I'd have to look back and see what day of the week it was, because he actually left, I want to say, on like a Monday.
Right.
And went to the gun club, and it was not uncommon for him to stay there. You know, he was going out to bait his stand about a week, you know, before hunting season started.
Right.
He had signed into the gun club, and I want to say it might have been that Tuesday that he was supposed to meet up with Janet, his wife, and go look at a Jeep, I believe it is, like 40-something minutes from home or something like that.
Okay.
And he never showed up.
Okay.
He was supposed to meet her there and never showed up. But it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't uncommon for him to stay a couple days, so she didn't think too much about it.
Right.
And then each day got progressively more concerned, was calling, leaving messages on his phone. He wasn't answering. She wasn't really sure where the gun club was, went out that Thursday, tried to find the gun club, didn't find the gun club, and then Friday contacted the police.
Right. Yeah. So a couple quick questions. I couldn't find this anywhere in any of the news articles. Does anybody know what he was wearing?
You know what? Good question. You know, I'm sitting here, as I'm working on dinner and talking to you, I'm wondering, because I have, because this summer he was declared legally deceased in court.
Right.
So I'm looking just to see here if it actually said what he was wearing. I mean, it was typical for him to be in, you know, some jeans and a boating t-shirt, you know.
Right. Yeah, and it was pretty warm that day, actually. I think it was 66 degrees during the day. So he may have very well just had jeans and a t-shirt, but I could not find a description anywhere, which was really odd.
It's going to be my guess, but when I have a little more time, just because this is some pretty extensive paperwork,
okay,
I will read back through it and see if I can get that answer for you.
Any idea that day, like what? I know you said he checked into the gun club.
Yes, about 9 a.m.
Okay, so do they like sign in? Is that what they do? Like they sign a book?
There's a book that they sign in.
Okay.
Usually they do so that they know who's there and what they're doing and where they're at. And he signed in that he was going to bait his stand.
Okay. Was he armed? Did he have a firearm with him? Or
that I do not know. Nothing was... in that I'm aware of, there was not any kind of firearm found in his car.
Okay, because the reason I'm asking is because, you know, things blow away, you know, clothes blow away, that kind of thing. But if he had a firearm and it wasn't in the car, perhaps maybe, you know, it would, that's not going to blow away.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So.
Ask my husband I don't believe he did, but I'll definitely ask the question as well.
Okay. It says that his truck was located on the 11th, which was, I believe, the Saturday. Those guys went out and they went looking on Friday night and they couldn't find him. according to Wilbur Swales. He says, he said it's a couple of us went out Friday and couldn't find anything. So what I wanted to ask was, do you know if he had a couple different stands or did he just have one stand?
No, he had multiple.
Okay. Okay. That explains that.
According to my husband, who had hunted with him many times when he was younger, you know, and some as an adult as well, you know, it's kind of, you know, and the way he did his stands, he didn't put them out there with easy access where people could use them. They were, you know, there was no one person that we're aware of that knew where every stand was besides him.
Okay.
So there might be somebody who knew where one or two were, but we don't know of any one person that knew where all of them were because that was kind of his thing.
That explains the delay and those guys not being able to pinpoint it right away. So that makes sense. Was the truck parked at the trail to the stand? Was there a trail to it?
I wouldn't even say there was a trail. I mean, I was out there. We were out there for actually 8 days searching. It wasn't really a trail, but it was, gosh, forgive me, I think it was about 75 yards off of the dirt road that he was parked on is where the stand was, if I remember correctly.
Okay. And it really wasn't a trail. You kind of had to bull your way through to get to it?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then, you know, and then the stand, you know, unless you knew what you were looking for, which me being from Arizona didn't really, you know, it's kind of, I think, kind of hidden up in the tree or up in the tree. But the stakes that he had that he would, you know, put in holes in the tree to get up to that stand were hidden, you know, in brush or whatever on the ground.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that was all still there. The bait was still in the car. It was honestly like he never, the dog was in the car, which would indicate that he was just going to be quick back and forth, but the bait was still in the car. So, and I don't know that they found any bait at the tree at that stand.
That was going to be my next question. So yeah, I mean, he, you would think that if he got out the bait, the stand, I mean, you know, he would take the bait with him, but I was thinking, you know, seeing as they found that molasses and corn in the back, perhaps he may have had some other type of bait or anything along those lines, but it doesn't sound like the bait ever got to the stand.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And there's a couple different maps online that show where the location is. Do you guys know exactly what location the truck was found?
Oh, you know, I was there, but I being from Arizona.
I got
so
you.
I understand. But again, I can look through everything I have and see what
Why don't I do this? We're going to exchange emails. I'm going to send you a couple of the maps and maybe see if, you know, they make sense in your head,
right?
You know, but it was on Radio Tower Road, right?
That sounds familiar. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Because I actually went out the other day, and I actually went to the road that's the next road over, mistakenly, because I was following one of the other maps. But it definitely was on Radio Tower Road. Good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds familiar.
So basically, Wilbur and three of the other guys from the hunting club, they actually find the Suburb or the Blazer on Saturday, correct?
I know. Gosh, I was thinking it was, well, I know the police went out on Friday, but I think they didn't find anything. And then it was the next day.
Okay. Gotcha. And did the police start searching immediately? Like as soon as they found, did they start searching immediately as soon as they found the car?
You know, I think to some extent, but it got to the point where we were kind of frustrated and we ourselves got a search and rescue group out there because one of their neighbors was affiliated with one. I think it was like their son or daughter and spouse or whatever had, it was the Burlington County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They probably did more than anything for us than anybody, But they got on it right away, and then there was a big clash, you know, because the police didn't want anybody else stepping on their territory.
Unbelievable.
And so it's kind of difficult, and we went out there. I mean, we flew out from Arizona all ready to go and search. And, you know, they kind of made us feel like we were just in the way. We just needed to stay back out of the way. And I mean, I just felt like so much, I mean, personal opinion, I felt like so much more could have been done and should have been done.
Yeah, it's real helpful, guys, for the egos to get in the way during one of these things, you know?
It very, very well did. Yeah. Oh,
unbelievable. That's actually, I saw your post on one of the Pine Barren forums, and it basically was like, hey, the state police aren't searching, so we've got to get somebody involved. Right. So I guess
I was doing anything and everything I could. I was talking to anybody that I could. We were putting up posters in every, you know, any kind of, any store that, you know, sold any kind of hunting stuff. We were going around the neighborhood.
Right.
I mean, we were doing everything we possibly could.
Yeah.
So getting it on the media, getting it on the radio, you know, everything we possibly could think of, you know, to get word out as quickly as possible.
Do you know how many days they actually searched the state police? Because I know that they called the search off on the 13th. And if the car was found on the 11th and they didn't get a start on it at all, that basically means they searched for 2 days. Does that sound right?
That could be accurate. I know we were out there for 8 days, but a lot of it, you know, was spent, you know, doing other things. It definitely wasn't 8 days out there in the woods. And then they kind of made us stay out of the way.
Right.
That probably is fairly accurate. I mean, and I know there were other groups that went out, smaller groups, people that had contacted me. But as far as the state police, I mean, you know, they were still investigating and they came by the house and they took a bunch of stuff you know, but as far as being out there combing the woods, probably not more than a couple of days.
Okay. Yeah. No bump lines, you know, no organized, everybody walk in, you know, ankle to ankle.
Well, we did do that when we were out there. We were only,
you guys did it, right?
To be able to see them. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they, in conjunction with them, but it was kind of more, they were doing their thing and we were working with Burlington County, but we were out there initially with them.
Okay. Do you feel like maybe it was shortened because you guys were bumping up against hunting season? Do you feel that was like a factor in them shortening it?
I do. Okay. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Because they said it was definitely not going to be safe to be out there.
One of the other rumors that I saw online, and I wanted to find out from you and get clarification on, is, had he gotten lost previously when he was out hunting?
Gotten lost?
Yeah.
Not that I'm personally aware of, no.
Okay.
I mean, he was a lifetime hunter, very avid hunter. I mean, he would hunt a little bit of everything.
And he's 74 years old, and he's walking out to his own tree stand and climbing up in it. He sounds like he was pretty spry.
Yeah, he really was. You know, he was 72 at the time.
Okay.
You know, they brought up the fact that he had, I think it was diabetes, I'm trying to think. But what he had did not require insulin or anything like that. I mean, he was...
Right. He was handling it with exercise.
You know, for his age, he was not, you know, there were no major health issues, none of that kind of stuff.
Right. So
nothing at all.
When's the last time you heard a peep, your family heard a peep from the state police? Have they closed the case?
Years.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's closed. And now that it's been, you know, he's been declared, the court proceedings were this summer. Sorry for the noise.
Oh, no, that's okay.
The court proceedings were this summer, but they backdated it to October 7th of last year.
Okay. And once again, on these Pine Barren forums, you know, which is, I kind of looked into, because when you were coming out, you were looking for some places to post some stuff to some hunters and stuff. And I saw you posted a couple messages on those. There was one rumor on there that the police may have been looking into foul play. Did they indicate that to you at all?
Well, you know what I think that stems from is because they had talked to other hunters, and there was talk about, you know, I just think there was, like I said, you know, they had their own space. They expected everybody to stay in their own lane. and, you know, stay away from their stand, stay away from their area that they had kind of claimed. And I think there had possibly been a run-in or two at times between hunters.
Gotcha.
And so I think that's where that came from.
When I was out there, when I took the ride out, I was amazed at how many hunting clubs there are. And I saw the drive lines that are in the woods that have obviously been cleared for a really long time. But one of the most crazy things I've ever seen, and I'll send you a picture of this. And I have a photo of it. I had to take a photo of it. I couldn't believe it. There was a white rock on the road with a gazing ball coming up from it, and on it was some foul language.
Mm-hmm.
I'll actually send you this photo. And I thought to myself, why is that it out here in the middle of the woods? But that was the first place my head went to, was these guys, there's so many hunting clubs, they're tripping over each other. And that this is obviously a message to another hunting club.
It's a warning. Yep. I would not doubt that at all.
So,
I know he definitely had run-ins, you know, because, I mean, just the way everything happened and the way everything looked, for whatever reason, it appeared to us, I still think to this day, that he stepped out of his vehicle and had a run-in possibly with somebody for some reason, or he saw something he shouldn't have. I don't know, but I don't know that he ever got to his stand. It didn't appear he did. It appeared he got out of his car and disappeared from the side of the road.
Wow. Yeah,
when it rained for a couple of days, they didn't even fingerprint the vehicle.
And the dogs couldn't catch a scent, right? I mean, the dogs had no scent. When they sent the dogs out there, they couldn't catch a scent. So you would think that if he was in those woods, they would have caught a scent.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows? I mean, was the vehicle plate? I don't know. I mean, did something happen? I mean, he did sign in the gun club. He never signed out. So he was at the gun club, and his vehicle was out in the pine barren. So how it got there, who drove it there, I mean, it's all a mystery. I mean, this is going to sound so crazy, but I seriously wanted to hire a pet psychic and have him talk to the dog, because the dog's the only one that knows, well, the only one we know of that knows what happened, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and he was very, very close to that dog. Every picture online you can see of him, he even had the dog on the boat with him.
Everywhere. Yeah, he took the dog everywhere, even when he wasn't supposed to. That dog never left his side.
That's great. Yeah, I'm the same way.
You know, there were so many stories. People would ask me, you know, well, maybe he just needed a break from his wife, and maybe, you know, he was done with the relationship and he decided to leave. I said, he would take the dog before he would take her. I mean, it's sad to say, but he might have left. You know, I mean, that wasn't the situation, and I knew that wasn't. I knew their relationship, you know, to some extent, but he would not have ever left that dog.
Yeah, and they were coming up on their 50th wedding anniversary. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that, you don't stick around for 48 years.
No, you don't. You don't.
Yeah.
You know, and I know it's rough at times because I'm married to a son who's just like him and have been for a heck of a lot of years now.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I know he was an avid fisherman and a hunter, and, you know, he had the business. He had, you know, Barry's Pretzels.
Barry's Pretzels, yeah.
What was he like? Was he, like, I know my father is the same age, and, you know, he's a crusty guy, but he's like a, you know, ball of mush when you get past all that.
Exactly. And see, that's the same thing. I mean, he could come off tough, especially when it came to his hunting and stuff, and people knew you don't mess with him. And
right.
He could be mouthy, you know, but you put him around my kids. You know, my kids idolized him. I mean, they missed him so much. The kids would do anything for him, with him, you name it. I mean, they couldn't wait to go see Pop Pop. That's what they called him.
That's awesome.
You know, he has children from, you know, his or grandkids from his other children. And that's another thing that he never would have left. You know, I did not, you know, we don't use home phones really anymore. And I did not get rid of my home phone for over 5 years because he knew that number and he would call the home phone before he would call our cell numbers, and I couldn't get rid of the number because I knew in my head, eventually, if he, you know, got out of whatever situation he was in, he was gonna call, you know, because he wouldn't have just left. He wouldn't have just left his kids. He wouldn't have just left his grandkids, and it's never happened, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, just a few more questions to clear some stuff up here. There was also something online about him maybe having a stroke previously. Is that true?
Well, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. When it came to medical stuff like that, you know, some people are very forthcoming, some
sure.
are not.
Sure.
And us being out here in Arizona, there were often things that would happen that we would not be notified of. So that's definitely something, you know, that I can find out from my husband for sure, because I don't want to misspeak on that.
Okay.
But, you know, they...
Well, that's
they
fine. I was just interested from the perspective of, you know, if he did have a stroke, then it is likely that he didn't go far in the woods, you know.
Right.
Maybe like 1,000 right. yards out from where that tree stand was would be about the limit right. where a 72-year-old right. man could get to. That's the right. reason for me asking that question.
Yeah, I don't remember every little thing, you know. My husband, one of his sons did have a stroke, and but I don't remember...
Okay.
My father-in-law ever having one, but I could be wrong. So
okay.
I will find out, though.
So how is your mother-in-law? Is she still with us?
Yes, she is.
Okay.
She's still living. The dog's still living.
Wow, Taffy's still around. Okay.
They're still in the same house in New Jersey. And my husband and my oldest son are out there visiting her right now. Not that this plays into it, but my oldest son has stage 4 colon cancer, so... He's making his rounds and visiting family and stuff because, you know, the outcome is not looking good. So Glenn went with him, and they went out to see his grandma. So, you know, he could see her. Because, I mean, she's doing fine, but she's not at the age that she wants to travel anymore. So,
gotcha.
You know, but, yeah, they're out there just visiting her and doing some fun things for the week. So, but no, she's hanging in there and doing pretty good.
We'd like to thank Debbie for granting us that interview, and it was very informative.
She was very gracious to take some time out of her life to speak to us. There's obviously a lot going on in her world.
And we'll hear from her more as we go along here. You know, but I guess what we need to do is lay eyes on what this place looks like.
I think it would help me put it into perspective.
Yeah. So we should take a ride out.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, so we are on the road on our way to our Warren Grove Recreation Area to actually see the spot where Barry Zeldin's car was found. His 1992 Chevy Blazer, his green Chevy Blazer, which showed up on the Saturday after he went missing.
Right, and that's where they were going to where they actually found the truck.
Yes. And what we'll do is we'll post for anybody in Jersey, we'll give you the coordinates you can go to. Turning off of Beaver Dam Road right now onto, making a left onto FAA Tower Road. Little rough spots here and there. It's definitely a little off-roadish, but it's still pretty wide open.
Yeah, just in general, it's wide open. The area is like all these pine trees, but they're not the 30, 40 foot pine trees. We're talking the 6 to 8 foot pine trees.
Yeah, these are pygmy pines.
Yeah, they're not large trees. There's not a lot of undergrowth around. And there's roads with a pretty regular spacing.
Yeah, and we've seen hunters on the way in because it's hunting season, so we've run across a couple of them, and they've seemed relatively friendly, waved, and said hi. But
and to clarify about roads, we're talking about sand roads, right? They're not paved; they're just sand roads.
Yeah,
cutting through this scrub brush pine is what I would call it, and
here we are.
Here we are.
to the side here. And
well, this is about where he parked too, right?
Yeah. Now, it doesn't say whether he was facing, what way he was facing. Okay. So that's the only piece of information that we don't have.
Well, we're facing west.
And, well, there is only two ways to face. You can either face going into the road or out of the road.
Right, right. So it's east or west, right?
Yeah.
So we're facing west.
So, I am pretty underwhelmed.
I don't know how anyone could get lost out here.
Yeah, let's check this out.
Yeah, all right. So, like, literally, you can see the power and the lines.
Actually cops going by out on Beaver Dam Road.
Yeah, out on the highway. But it's just, it's not like it's thick. It's not dense. There's not a lot of underbrush.
Now, there's a trail here, but the trail is basically wide open. Yeah. I mean, it's scrub pine, scrub brush. It's not that dense in my opinion.
I don't know how an adult would get lost.
I have tons of questions.
This didn't actually resolve anything for us. It actually opened up more questions.
Absolutely. So, let's get out of here.
All right.
I'm confused.
Why don't you share with everybody why you're confused?
I guess I expected this to be more dense.
Darker.
You know, more maybe taller pine trees. No, just more dense underbrush. And it's really not. There's a sand road. There's a little divider here right where his car stopped. So I guess that was kind of like a little landmark for him, but the trails that are through this area are pretty wide. Mm-hmm. And pretty wide open. And here's the other thing, everywhere you look, if you look up in the air, you can see the tower
or power lines. Yeah, it would be really hard to get lost. And we were driving around the area for a bit before we started recording. And it's like there's like a chessboard of dirt roads out here. You don't go very far without running into another dirt road intersection.
And when we looked into this information on, you know, how far the tree stand was from the car, you know, there were four different answers depending upon what source you went by. You know, Our personal source in the family told us it was about 75 to 100 yards in. That makes some sense.
That makes sense.
Another account said it was like a tenth of a mile away to the north. They all said the north. Another one said 2/10 of a mile away to the north.
That starts to make less sense.
And then the other one said a half a mile.
That makes no sense.
That makes no sense because you would have to.
Right. Here and there.
So, if that's the case, and if that winds up being the case, the actual tree stand, and I guess we got to get somebody to take us to the tree stand, but why didn't he park closer to the tree stand? Because literally, if you go into these woods and you go more than a tenth of a mile, you know, in going north, you're going to come across another road.
Right. I mean, that's the big thing. You're going to come across another road. And the other thing is, why would he park here and leave the dog in the car and walk a half a mile away? That makes no sense.
Right. He would park closer.
He would park closer.
Yeah. When you look around this area, it's just not an area one could imagine an adult in their right mind.
Who hunts a lot
getting lost in.
I mean, my mother doesn't hunt and she doesn't do woods. I don't think my mother could get lost in these woods.
Yeah, I really have a hard time imagining anybody.
All you have to do is look up.
Above a toddler getting lost in these woods.
I know.
Yeah, this is just, I don't know. This doesn't make any sense.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
We're really going to need a lot of help from the public with this podcast. Please share it as much as you can. Get it out to as many people as you can. The more people we can get listening to this, the better. It's not for our sake. Everybody who's a podcaster knows it's kind of a, you know, a passion project. We want to help this family. That's what we're looking to do. Share it as much as you can. Do whatever you can. We're certainly going to try to do that. Being out there, knowing how much Barry loved this dog, if you were going to go into the woods and bait your deer stand, you know, you would have took the dog.
I would think so. I would think the dog would go with him. I think the bait would go with him.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You get to Sonny's house in another car. You remember to transfer the bait to the green, you know, blazer. But then you get out there. You know, the line is he went into the woods to bait his deer stand, got turned around, got lost, and died in there. Okay? There's problems with that story. Number one, he didn't take the bait in.
Correct. He left it in the truck.
Another thing we know from follow-up with Debbie is that, you know, he did get lost once, one other time, at least one other time, and had his cell phone. So he's used to getting lost in there. You know, that's something he's going to bring, that cell phone. He didn't bring that cell phone.
He did not. The cell phone was in the truck.
He didn't bring the bait. He didn't bring the cell phone. And when they checked the tree stand, the bait wasn't at the tree stand. So if you're walking in empty-handed without this bait, how far would you get in before you go, Jesus, I forgot the bait?
None of it makes sense. He didn't take the dog. He didn't take the bait. He didn't take his cell phone. It's just not believable.
That's why when Debbie says she believes that he was confronted when he got outside the car, that a possibility. There are other possibilities. So what we need to do is we need to take a fact-based approach to this, get into, you know, what witnesses and people who were interviewed for the case said. You know, we need to put together a timeline for the 7th to the 12th when this car is found.
I agree. And we have information from Debbie, and then we will reach out and get information from the state police. And we need to tie it all back to the timeline. And we know already there's contradictions. So I think we need to just methodically start on the 7th and walk day by day through to the 12th with the information available.
Correct. And you know what else is curious, too? How come the search was so short? How come it was only 2.5 days?
I would ask the...
Did those guys start to think...
Police.
At one point, they searched another area, too. Did they start to think that maybe this car was placed there? That's the stuff that we have to get into. And once again, we need your help, guys. You know, share this podcast. Get it out there. Let people listen to it. We're going to have probably a couple more episodes quickly here. And then as we gather information and some other information comes in from people, we're not going to stick to a set schedule on this. We're going to put out episodes when we have stuff to say. But in the meantime, share it with, you know, your family members. Let them know about it. Let them know about the Barry Zeldin case. Read up on it yourself. You know, let's try to raise awareness. You heard in the interview what's going on with the family. So let's see what we can do. You know, maybe get another proper search done out there if that's actually the case. But I'm skeptical.
Well, it's been
of the official story.
I'm skeptical of the official story. And even if he were out there somewhere at this point, you know, it's swampy. The likelihood of finding anything, I think, is.
And there were enough, sir. I mean, there wasn't enough of an intense search done, but there was enough searches done that you would think. If a 72-year-old man had a health problem out there, you know, something would have been found, or his cadaver dogs would have found something. So, thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. And we'll be bringing you more episodes as we have things to say. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good night.
Good night.